Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. Trappist beer are brewed by monks in only 8 countries in the world. Excuse me. Belgium is the most conspicuous country with 6 Trappist beer producing monasteries. The Netherlands have 2 Trappist beer producing monasteries. The other 6 have 1 each. One of them is in the US. In 1997, 8 Trappist abbeys founded the International Trappist Association to prevent non-Trappist commercial companies from abusing the Trappist name. This private association created a logo that is assigned to goods such as cheese, beer, wine, etc. that meets price production criteria. For the beers, these criteria were the following. A. The beer must be brewed within the walls of a Trappist monastery, either by the monks themselves or under their supervision. B. The brewery must be of secondary importance within the monastery, and it should witness to the business practices proper to a monastic way of life. C. The brewery is not intended to be a profit-making venture. The income covers the living expenses of the monks and the maintenance of the buildings and grounds. Whatever remains is donated to charity for social work and to help persons in need. And that's a quote from Wikipedia. Chimay is the name of a Belgian Trappist ale. Chimay are brewed in 5 different alcohol strengths. The blue capsule is the second strongest. That's the sort that I'm going to review today. With 9% ABV, it is one of the stronger beer sorts on the market. Needless to say, it comes only in bottled form. The bottle contains 33 centiliter beer, or about 11 liquid ounces. By the way, surf on the good monks marvelous and generous website, chimay.com. Chimay is made from water, barley malt, sugar, wheat starch, hop, spices, and yeast. How about the experience then? It's got a very foamy head, very good head. And it's a dark beer sort in color. Very rich, sweet, brown, sugary taste. Many would say that this taste is chocolatey, but I fail to recognize chocolate taste in beers. Creamy or flavory and rich is what I want to say instead of elements of chocolate. There is no chocolate in beer. It's got a perfect bitterness. Maybe a little yeasty, of course. but just slightly. Some spices, but not overemphasized. And it's got a perfect carbonation level for this sort of beer. Or for this tasting beer. That is not too much. It is a bit strong with its 9% ABV. Okay, if I'm going to grade Jimé, I give it 10 out of 10 devils. It ought therefore come as no surprise that this is my favorite beer sort. This is my favorite beer sort, for sure. You shouldn't drink and drive. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. Today's topic is a fallible tactics called hedgehog defense. The Germans had a tactic called hedgehog defense, which was about forming circular defensive positions, which they often used in the late part of World War II. That meant that they could open fire in all directions. These hedgehog defenses were often bypassed by the Red Army. It was not worthwhile for the Red Army to stop for foot soldiers with handheld firearms. Forward, forward was the Red Army's motto. Since the German tactic was only a defensive tactic for retreats, when they usually lacked ammunition and hand grenades and had to hit a target with every bullet, and shoot only when in immediate danger. The German hedgehog defenders had to watch as the storm pushed forward without being able to do anything. They were forced to keep calm and hope for a rescue and that the line of defense was restored. The only benefit a hedgehog defense could do was to relieve its own retreating verbands, that's units in German. But the Red Army never stopped to deal with a hedgehog defense, unless it was a hedgehog defense that was partly made up of armored tanks. Hedgehog tactics was common during World War II, but what if the Russians have only a limited amount of warships and infantry available and have no real front line, but still have quick access to system operators with mortars and fire guarding units? Will they not then stop and eliminate this hedgehog defense? If you have to use the tactics of hedgehog defense but are met with grenades, then it is good if you, as a defender, have mortars yourself and enough grenades and ammunition and prepared fire guarding units to be able to duel. If your mortar deployment is too cramped, then all your mortars servicemen can be knocked out with a single grenade, and in practice it'll have to be a triangular formation or at most a square formation with four units lobbing grenades. I wouldn't call it a hedgehog defense if the four mortar units interact by having half of them redeploy during the time that two of the mortar units cover the two mortars that are relocating, since it will then take place over fairly large areas. If the opponent partially stops and engages us with what counter-strike systems he has got available and annihilates our own before moving on to catch up to his main forces, what is the point of a hedgehog defense? Even more fearful is, of course, if one's own encounter attack helicopters or attack aircraft carrying the thermobaric rockets and phosphorus weapons. Hedgehog defenders sacrifice their lives in a situation where hedgehog defense, as such, is tactically meaningless. The only upside is that the hedgehog defenders buy some time for their retreating comrades. If you have the opportunity to unlimber heavy grenade launchers or light mortars for soft and semi-hard targets, and have enough ammunition and a well-placed fire-guarding unit, you can be of some use in the best of possible worlds by covering your own retreating forces. But still, your opponent has to deal with your remaining mortars as long as you have ammunition, fire-guarding units, and targets. The opponent does not have unlimited fighting strength if they have disembarked by sea with troops upholding advanced naval connections. It is the enemy's attack helicopters that are probably the most dangerous. I probably would not recommend a hedgehog defense, other than as a last emergency measure if time is a vital factor for one's own retreating verbands, or to protect one's own civilian population, because I do not think that a hedgehog defense works satisfactorily. And in particular, the heavier armed, the bigger the risk that there will be following a directed counterstrike. The hedgehog defense is thus, in practice, a death sentence for our own soldiers when effective, due to our supposed numerical and material inferiority. I mainly think of the opponent's attack helicopters. You can place units in a hedgehog defense behind a grove, partial forest, or behind a crest or embankment, and move from prepared place to prepared place under the cover of another mortar. But such a method requires resources and time. And time is a factor that will probably not be on your side. Grenade launchers and fire guiding units are nowadays equipped with GPS and other support equipment, and probably the fire guiding units also have laser rangefinders, so that they can aim and be able to place themselves far apart from the mortar, even at an angle with the mortars in the other direction and the target in between. This makes it so much easier to tactize because it is easier to keep the fire guiding unit hidden and separated from the mortars. You probably won't have to find the range when you lob grenades either. The fact that the grenades strike approximately right on the target at the first lob provides great advantages. The fire guiders must have signal contact with the mortars. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.